And let's head to Somalia now. After this weekend's truck bombings, rescuers and volunteers are digging through debris for remains. Hundreds are injured and many are still unaccounted for. And the government says they expect the death toll to rise past 300. No one has taken responsibility for the attack, but Somalia's government is blaming al-Shabaab. They're an al-Qaeda-linked Islamic extremist group in Africa with a long history in Somalia and in the region. In 2013, the group was blamed for an attack at a mall in Nairobi that killed 67 people. And back in 2015, al-Shabaab targeted a series of hotels in Mogadishu, killing at least 15 people. Kevin Seif is Africa Bureau Chief from the Washington Post, and he has the latest from Mogadishu.
The death toll just continues to go up. I mean, the attacks happened on Saturday evening in Mogadishu, but they were so big and the destruction was so massive that it's taken a long time to figure out who's still missing, how many people have died. I mean, right now, I think the total is over 300, but it continues to rise. So people are trying to identify family members. There's a huge blood donation campaign going on because a huge number of people are wounded and sort of on the edge of survival. So, I mean, it's incredibly bleak in Mogadishu right now, even in a city that is used to car bombs, is used to big attacks. This is by far the biggest attack they've ever seen.
Is there a message coming from the leadership of the country to people in Mogadishu and around the country about how they'll react here?
You know, the president has declared 3 days of national mourning. There's been a sort of sense from the leadership across the Somali government that they're trying to crack down, trying to improve security. But it's been so many years of these kinds of attacks. I mean, this is a particularly dramatic one. But I think many Somalis, particularly in Mogadishu, have sort of lost faith in the government's ability to provide security, to keep al-Shabaab, the sort of major Islamist group, from conducting these kinds of attacks in broad daylight in major hotels. And so the government has a real challenge ahead to try to convince people that, you know, Mogadishu, you know, for a long time, there was the sort of slogan of the government was Mogadishu Rising. And there were pictures of people on the beach playing soccer and eating at outside restaurants. And this idea that, like, the war was fading away and normal life was returning. It's really hard for the government to promote that narrative now after an attack like this.
And indeed, the president of Somalia, Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, took power in February promising that very thing, that he would bring the country out of conflict with al-Shabaab.
Exactly. And he had the support of the U.S. behind him, too. I mean, the president of Somalia is actually a dual citizen. So he, when he came to power, there was a sense that he would be, you know, a very sort of helpful partner with the U.S. in cracking down on terrorism, improving security across the country. And I think what this attack shows is that that's just an incredibly difficult thing to do. I mean, the U.S. has had a counterterrorism campaign in Somalia that's gone on for the better part of a decade. There have been drone strikes that have killed multiple leaders of al-Shabaab, this organization that was responsible or most likely responsible for this attack. And yet here we are. So I think even a counterterrorism campaign as concerted as the American one, even a Somali government that is saying all the right things, comes up against, you know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, in East Africa, which is an incredibly powerful terrorist organization that appears to be well-financed and well-resourced.
What is it the United States needs to be thinking about now in Somalia?
So I think the U.S. has been trying very hard to develop a Somali security force that can fend against this sort of a threat, you know, a security force that ideally would have been able to stop a truck bomb like the one that we saw, a security force that could conduct its own offensive against al-Shabaab. And that has been, I think, one of the biggest failures in the history of the war in Somalia. I mean, it is an absolute failure. There is still no functional Somali military. The Somali police is wildly corrupt and often accused of human rights abuses. So at this point, there's no Somali force that you can rely on to do the sort of basic security work, the kind of basic counterinsurgency work that needs to happen in Somalia. And I think until that sort of local force is created, there's really no substitute. There's really no way that the U.S. with a bunch of drone strikes and airstrikes can pacify the country.
Kevin Seif, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Kevin Seif is Africa Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. The dual truck attack in Somalia over the weekend is undermining stability in that country. Somalia is already struggling with famine and drought while trying to overcome a decade of violence by the Islamist terrorist group Al-Shabaab. With some analysis now, Peter Pham. He's director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council and co-author of Somalia, Fixing Africa's Most Failed State. Peter Pham, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
When attacks like this happen, Peter, the victims suffer horribly, of course. The rest of us are left to look for the messages embedded in that attack. What did you see in this devastating launch over the weekend?
The thing I saw primarily was that beyond the obvious concern for the victims, it was the reminder that Al-Shabaab is a remarkably resilient organization. This is a group whose roots go back several decades, whose current form perhaps dates more recently, but it's proven remarkably resilient. It's adapted to changes in the political and security environment of Somalia and the neighboring region, and transformed itself each time to survive. And it's recently been under a lot of pressure. Just a few years ago, Shabaab controlled two-thirds of the territory of Somalia, and the government was barely confined to a few buildings in Mogadishu and the airport zone. Since 2011, through the efforts and sacrifices of the African Union peacekeepers, Shabaab has been gradually pushed out. And through recent strikes by the United States and others, its leadership ranks have been decimated, but it has adapted and less interested now in seizing and holding territory. That hasn't proven to be a winning strategy. So it's engaged in these terrorist attacks. This is by far the deadliest, but it's not the first one. My count is the explosions this past weekend were the 34th time car bombs had been detonated in Mogadishu since January of this year. 34 car bombings. It's an amazing number.
So as you're saying, and as we heard before, tactics shift, Al-Shabaab still is showing it has the ability to inflict enormous damage. What about strategically? What can Al-Shabaab do now to really undermine the government or undermine stability in Somalia?
A couple of things. One is, one has to acknowledge that the current government under President Farmaajo is arguably the best chance that Somalia has had in years, if not decades, to reestablish some modicum of stability. That being said, one has to be realistic and clear-eyed. This is not a government that is without its warts. The Auditor General of the government acknowledged that somewhere up to $20 million exchanged hands in the process of creating this government as people literally bought offices. That's not a regime that is likely to engender much support or to be able to fight. In order to fight a counterinsurgency and win against a group like that, one has to have legitimacy. And what Shabaab is aiming to do right now is to undermine the tenuous legitimacy and hold of the government by showing people that you may have a government, but it's unable to deliver security for you. And that's a devastating message.
We're talking Al-Shabaab and terror in Somalia with Peter Pham of the Atlantic Council. This is The Takeaway. Peter, the United States has been focused largely on ISIS, places like Syria, Iraq, even Libya. Has Somalia been neglected?
I would say Somalia actually has gotten a fair amount of attention. There were a number of drone strikes as well as a few raids during the Obama administration. And earlier this year, the Trump administration loosened a bit the rules of engagement, devolving more authority to the commanders on the ground, those closer to make decisions. And as a result, there have probably been about a dozen drone strikes or other actions involving U.S. assets in the region, and they've not been without effect. In July, there were two drone strikes that took out two key regional commanders of Al-Shabaab. Just last month, about a dozen militants who were planning a terrorist attack were eliminated. So there have been some successes. On the other hand, I think the attack this weekend, as well as the ones that preceded, also underscore the limits. Counterterrorism strikes of this kind, these military strikes, can certainly eliminate high-value targets and take out forces. But what's needed is policing and security and intelligence to fight the new game that Shabaab is playing.
is the United States doing enough on that score then, policing and intelligence, sort of what I'll call the ground game of counterterrorism strategy and not necessarily relying simply on drone strikes?
Well, here's the rub. There's a lot the United States and its other international partners who have been involved, especially our European friends, in Somalia can do. But at the end of the day, the only way stability and security are going to return to Somalia is if the Somalis themselves take ownership and there's a government that's capable of that. And that's where we hit some real problems. To give you an example, over the last few years, the United States, as well as its principal European allies, the French, the British, as well as the European Union, acting with a host of smaller countries, have trained somewhere between 60 and 80,000 troops for the Somali government. Yet if you go out there and try to count the ones you can find, there are probably only a few thousand. So that means, you know, maybe 10% of those who are trained are still serving the functions for which they're trained. The other 90%, where have they gone? Some of them quite possibly have even gone over to the enemy. That's a real problem. And that's not a problem that the international community can solve. It's a problem that the Somali government needs to solve.
Meanwhile, Peter Pham, we've been reporting for weeks, months on this show about the famine in Somalia and countries around it. Draw the line before we let you go to connect that political crisis of the famine to the terror that we're seeing in Mogadishu.
Well, it's certainly, that's yet another thing that undermines the legitimacy of the government. And this is why it's important not only to feed people because it's the right thing to do, but also reinforces the legitimacy and stability of the government, which is really, for all its warts, our bulwark against al-Shabaab.
Peter Pham, director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council and co-author of Somalia, Fixing Africa's Most Failed State. Peter Pham, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.